morning, everyone. I see that everyone has synchronized their watches. Time moves on. Welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in the city of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia. As is our custom, we will read the declaration of the ULT everywhere. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution or bylaws nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And we would invite those who are attending for the first time to pick up the printed declaration and the program and a few words of encouragement to be found in this little pamphlet. Because in the room between the auditorium and the library is a desk, and before meetings and after meetings, there's always a volunteer there who will explain to you in detail any other information that you may wish to have. Now, as stated, our program here consists of two meetings. Today, of course, and during the week, Wednesday. Now, the doors open here Wednesday night at 5:30. And when you come in, you will meet a student volunteer who is the librarian. Because the library is open from 5:30 till 7:30. And in the library, you will not only find this little pamphlet, but also numerous volumes and books. Straight Line Teachings of Theosophy, plus other additional volumes that you may wish to peruse. When the library closes at 7:30, you meet in this room. And you have about 15 minutes before the meeting begins at 7:45. This is true on Wednesday night, and on Sunday mornings, the doors open at 10:30 and you can come in and wait. And as you see, we began promptly at 11 a.m. The topics on Wednesday night generally apply to a volume or book or course of study that have been with us for a long time. And this winter, we're studying In the Ocean of Theosophy, the title, by William Q. Judge, who was an associate of H.P. Blavatsky. Because you will find at the top of the declaration, to spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. The lodge, as you see, beautiful building, been here a long time, but it's supported entirely by voluntary contributions of time, muscle labor, and of course, any monies that you wish to donate, see the associate at the desk and they will inform you how to make a contribution. Now, we don't impose dues or anything like that, but if you feel that you wish to contribute, that is your choice. Briefly as possible, the topic for the month of November will be reincarnation and karma. Today, November the 6th, the topic will be reincarnation, a universal doctrine of hope. Those that participate here on the platform are like yourselves, questioners, volunteers, because it is found that participating, as many do, they get a better understanding and also fulfilling that desire to live to benefit others. If you have any other questions, please address them to the chair. This morning, we're going to be reading a few paragraphs from a little book called Through the Gates of Gold. And it happens to be in the chapter, The Secret of Strength. Not only is man more than an animal because there's a God in him, but he's more than a God because there is an animal in him. That is the whole secret. That is what makes man strong, powerful, able to grasp heaven and earth in his hands. Do not fancy it is easily done. The animal in man, elevated, is a thing unimaginable in its great powers of service and strength. You forget, you who let your animal self live on, merely checked and held within certain bounds, that it is a great force, an integral portion of the animal life of the world you live in. With it you can sway men and influence the very world itself. More or less, perceptibly, according to your strength. The God given his right place will so inspire and guide this extraordinary creature, so educate and develop it, so force it into action and recognition of its kind, that it will make you tremble when you recognize the power that has awakened within you.
We thought that to be apropos of sort of understanding who and what we are. Because whether we look closely at an individual or if we look throughout the universe, we see duality. We see it in everyday life. We see it in the stars, in within that whole universe. We see it in the lower kingdoms. We see duality. We are, as they stated in many of the ancient teachings, we are gods within the making. We have the germ within each and every one of us. This is what we're told. And this whole idea of a doctrine of hope, not just a doctrine of hope, but a universal doctrine of hope, from the highest we could possibly think of, down to the littlest insect, to the smallest grain of sand. Every human being is a combination of spirit and matter, that lower personal self and that higher spiritual self. Now, there is something within us which we call the perceiving power. This power within us never changes. It always is. It is the same in all beings, but we can say only in the degrees of its use in any one being or any being. Now we know this idea of reincarnation. Now some people may embrace this doctrine of reincarnation, even if they may not really have a difficult time saying, well, what it is that really reincarnates. But they have a sense that they have been some places before, that they've had certain kinds of experiences before. And this sort of, we could call intuition, a sort of deja vu on this plane of matter. So we have to ask ourselves, what is it that we are believing when we say we believe in reincarnation? We are believing that some aspect, it states, of ourselves, perhaps an aspect unknown to ourselves, continues after the body demises. It's a kind of spiritual intuition that comes from a far different source than that of our hunches that we have of every day on mundane matters. It's said to be a higher source of consciousness, intuitional sight. It's said it transcends, and it's a transcendental kind of knowledge, and yet it is within us. Now we found in some of Plato's writings a couple things that we were not aware of that we'd like to share with you, because it might help us understand this idea of the hope that comes with that doctrine of reincarnation. There is something about us as self-conscious human beings that transcends our bodily existence. To try to make it part of our inner mind, that it's no use to worry, that things will be all right no matter what comes, and that we are resolved to do what we see before us and trust to karma for all the rest. Now, karma is the sister in doctrine to reincarnation. One is the cause, one is the processing. We will not be spending much time on karma, but we will accept if we need questions on it. Now, William Q. Judge tells us, experience we must have, and if we accept it as that of our own hands, we are wise. That is, while striving to do our whole duty to the world and ourselves, we will not live the past over again by vain and hurtful regrets. So between Plato's writing and that little bit of information from Mr. Judge, it leaves us to believe that. So what is it that's really important to learn in any one lifetime? These are the questions we have to ask. And what is needed in any one lifetime? It says patience, endurance, and finally, renunciation. This requires an unyielding effort over a long period of time, even lifetimes. Those three, patience, endurance, and renunciation, are those things that we have to use and work through. And that's primarily what we're here for, whether we know it or not. We must come to the recognition of our own immortality within our nature, the evolution of soul for which alone all the universe exists. Now, reincarnation alone, it states, gives hope that there is a lasting part in everyone, and it is that part and that alone that can work our salvation. Since it is greater than any circumstance and will exist when our lower natures have changed beyond recognition, justice is that law of the universe. One sort of earns a vision by living it, not merely thinking about it. So it's something that we have to literally work on. And there are many times that we could use this whole idea of working on this idea with that basic nightly review that the ancient teachings, all of them said, each individual should, before one goes to sleep at night, try to review their day. Try to look at it without putting any personal attachment to it, but just to look at it and sort of balance it, sort of look at it. Was this a correct thing to do? Was this a right thing to do? Was I inadequate in explaining something to somebody? Did I give it my all? If we think about this and remember that no effort at all, it tells us, is ever wasted. Any energy that we put forth to understand ourselves and all beings is something that is ours, and our sincere attempts will in time reap their harvest. Also, it says, also at the close of any lifetime, in particular, for examining our ideals and seeing where we can improve on them and how we can work on them next time, like a review of it. So it's not only a daily review that is very helpful for this idea and seeing the hope that's in it, for all the aspirations that any human being has. Is there time in any one lifetime to realize them, to be able to express them? We all have had points of wanting and aspiration to do something good for others. We are affected by the news that we hear of what happens around us and around the world. And that feeling of, I wish there was something I could do to help or do to try to understand. And if we use that idea of justice and the idea that everything that comes to any one of us comes to it because we have created it, we are getting the results of it, whether it be for good or for ill. And if we understand the quicker we can learn the lessons that we're here for, the quicker we can become an example, not only to others, but to ourselves. Because if one works to be a help to humanity and mankind, it sort of makes us forget about the, quote, personal me. And we drop that and we think more universally. And whether we know it or not, with working in that direction, it tells us we're also helping ourselves. Our real, true nature is trying to come through. And it says the individuality of the divine ego and the personality of the human animal, those are the two within us. Those are the ones we have to worry about. Worrying that we're not taking the time or the interest in it. And also in the Theosophical teachings, when we speak about the third object, to investigate those hidden mysteries of nature and the psychic and spiritual powers latent in man, and we emphasize the word latent. It is latent, but the powers are there. Every one of us have it. So it's an idea of conquering, subduing thoughts and ideals that we've carried that don't have an all-encompassing feeling to them, that leaves us partially here and partially there. We're looking for something that's more of an importance, something that we can put our hearts and minds to, that's something that will last, not something that's just here today and will be gone tomorrow, but something that's everlasting, that falls in line with everything in the universe. So if it alone can work our salvation, this is where we have to look. And it's really not a difficult thing to do, but the fact is we have to have the tenacity to keep trying. Doesn't matter how many times we slip or fall in a course of a day, in a week, in a month, in a year. As long as we're willing to pick ourselves up and try to understand and see the balance within this universe, within each and every human form we know, then in a way we are working towards helping, and we have that responsibility. All the lower kingdoms, all the consciousness that's in theirs, their makeup, all the instinct that's in there, all the sensitivity. They might not have self-consciousness, but there is something there that connects it and keeps it in total. And we are, in a way, responsible for their movement up in this whole great vast period of evolution. So to believe, to desire, to trust, something that we wish to accomplish, solve, or resolve, it's hopeful. It gives a hopeful prospect, a feeling of confidence within each and every one of us. And we can all take that initial step by asking, what within me reincarnates? That's where it's got to start, to understand what we are inside. So now you might have some questions on the subject. Yes.
So if our understanding is correct, reincarnation is the doctrine of hope and responsibility. Sometimes when things look bleak, we forget about hope, that there is a brighter day to come. It may be a dark day today, but our responsibility is to sow better seeds for the future and not to get too mired up in the present circumstances. Would that be correct?
That would be very correct, because we have for so long been enamored with the material side of life that we have covered up and veiled the true spiritual side that we are. In the ancient teachings, when they say it's like an idea of a spirit entering in to a form to help the lives and the intelligence in that form be elevated. That's a large responsibility. And for those of us who has ever been in a dire strait at any one time, and the fact that we're here today to talk about it, isn't that saying something about the strength within us? Yes.
So those lives and elements of the kingdoms that are in our bodies, it was mentioned that we elevate them by our use of them. What happens to them when the thinker moves on and the body dies?
What happens to the lives within the body when the thinker moves on? Well, first of all, of the material aspect of it, when the body can no longer take in that strength and that effervescent power of life, it starts to deteriorate and breaks down. In theosophy, we're taught that the idea of the word's going to come to me in a minute. Not to be buried, but
cremation.
Thank you. Cremation. Cremation is good because it is better for helping those lower lives than putting them in a steel or a wooden coffin and then having it buried with 6 feet underground or whatever. By having the idea of having cremation, it's immediately releasing all those lives back to their kingdoms or their place of development immediately. And it's like a cleansing. And yet, on the other hand, let's think about it, it's also in a way good for the other parts of the families that are left. It's a different thing than just knowing a body in a box in the ground. It's something you can pull at any time you want. Your memory, you know, you can bring them back mentally in your mind immediately. So the idea of helping and giving back those lives to their kingdom is one way of setting them. And also it says, it's just like when we sit down to eat, and the food we're eating and the processing we're taking, if one has a mind that's serene and calm, it's better than if one's eating under anguish, under fear, under hatred, because we're coloring all those lives. Every time we breathe in and breathe out, we're breathing in lives other than ourselves, in and out. We can influence them. So it always says, try to be of a pleasant and calm mood when one is sitting down to take food. Yes?
Well, it's fascinating on what was just said, that it makes the human so responsible. And I mean, just to consider how we, just with our thoughts and our feelings, how we can affect not only each other, but as was said, the lower kingdoms. It's just amazing, and to think that we have such power for good and such power for bad. Mm-hmm. And if these ideas were more, I mean, more people understood them, we could, you know, the world would be in such a better place. But then we think Mr. Judge made a comment about with just how many people, 500 earnest theosophists, how things could change. And just by our populating the astral with good thoughts, with meditation, helping others, we as an individual can affect a change, because we hear all this stuff going on in the world almost as soon as it happens,
right.
And we do feel helpless. But if people would know that indeed, by populating the astral,
And we think that when one first enters upon the idea of even picking up a book and even looking at the word theosophy, just looking at Eastern philosophies, it's their way of life that is so different than ours. It's things that they've been brought up with that are just very natural to them, where a lot of the things that we've been brought up are things that have been forced on us, either by a parent, by a teacher, by situations. It's, a lot of it is very, how else can you say it? It's very materialistic. Whereas in the East, it's, there's a spiritual basis from the back of the ancient teachings. And it's been tried and true. And the idea that when we think of all the great things we'd like to do, and you know within yourself, I'm not going to be able to do all this if I live to be 200. But the desire is so strong to want to do it, whether it be something like being a physician, wanting to physically help with people, wanting to be someone who can travel and travel all over and meet different cultures and different people. And you know that in this lifetime, you're not going to be able to do that. Here's where reincarnation comes in. To be able to know if one has a strong desire for a love or a humanitarian type of work they'd like to do in some lifetime. And if it's that strong, the idea of this cause and effect, the law of karma, we're coming back again. If there's something so strongly felt in any one lifetime, it doesn't disappear. Thoughts are things. They're put out into the world. They're put out into the astral. In some lifetime, your high desire can be expressed. And if we look at it as a spiritual, Buddha did not happen overnight. The Christ did not happen overnight. Krishna did not happen overnight. We, in a way, are that Krishna and that Arjuna. Yes?
The reading, it states that man is more than a god because of the animal in him, which infers that with the two seem to be contradictory. Can we explain why he's more than a god because of the animal?
If we go back to that idea of spirit needing matter to express, needing to, it's like taking fire to light the wood. We need that spiritual fire to light the matter, to bring it alive, to question. So it's that, when we think about it, sometimes if we look at the world today, man acts lower than any physical animal that we know alive in some extents. But the fact is, the animal part is the form. Everything within us. We are spirit. It's like an actor putting on a costume. We're the actor, but we're going to change many costumes and be in many different plays. But it's still the same actor putting on the costume and going into the plays. Yes.
And also, doesn't that reflect also on the fact that man has the ability to choose, which gives him a power of both the animal and the god?
That power of choice, they don't. They have consciousness on their level, but they don't have self-consciousness. And with self-consciousness comes a responsibility of the power to choose. Yes, way in the back.
In the ancient myths from different areas of the world, we find the idea that at some point the gods become jealous of man
because man, as was just expressed, has the potential in his choosing to become as them or higher than them. Because if there is no end to possibilities in an endless universe, there is the opportunity to develop. But as was said, the only place that can be done is where spirit meets matter, which is in man. So it's an interesting paradox when we look at it.
It is an interesting paradox. And the fact that it has to be done here on this plane of existence, and it has to be done beside being on this plane of existence. This is the only plane, and the only state that it can be done is in man's waking state. So we add the waking state and the fact that it has to be done on this plane of matter can help us understand how the development and why the reason of coming back again. If we look at the idea that life is nothing but lessons to be learned. I mean, we're not here for our highest and altruistic parts. We're here for things we need to learn. We're not here because we're in balance and in harmony with everything in the universe, and we look and we only see the one. We never see any separateness, which we know on this plane one sees a lot. So it has to be worked on this plane. Yes?
Well, it seems that when we hear these words and think about that paragraph, the first thing we do, we think about cows and chickens and oxen and horses. In other words, we think of an animal, we think of that being or form that we're familiar with every day. So therefore, Theosophy is trying to get us to raise our observation a bit. What is it about an animal that makes man more than a god?
What is it about the animal that makes man more than a god? We have to understand that even though we have the makings of becoming a god, and we have the germ within us, we have to understand it's not something that's going to happen overnight. We have to build, shall we say, the temple that we can enter. And it is through all these material things that we have to work through. So the fact is that so long we have given the attention to the outside and not had the initiative to look within, which the ancient teachings tell us, look within, thou art Buddha. We always have probably had many, many, many lifetimes. If we've been reincarnating and have been on this plane as thinking human beings for over 1,500 years, 1,800 years, don't you think there's a million? Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, figure out, just in lifetimes, how many lifetimes do you think we've been through? And how many situations have we redone? Even though it might have a little difference in coloration or one thing or another, it's that we're going over the same thing over and over. And we just, the light bulb's not going off because we're just not giving it a chance. It's something that has to be realized. And if we don't realize it, we're never going to ever want to ask the whys and what fors. And it does start with asking. Because if we understand ourselves and what makes us up as a, quote, human being, we can see that there's a lot more aspects to us than what we see just looking in the mirror. And if we could understand how we think and act and react within nature, then we can honestly say we've learned how everything acts and reacts within nature, because all the powers that are within us are within all of us. We're all at different degrees of development. Some people learn quicker than others, but the fact of the matter is, once you learn something, nothing that you're going to read after that or someone says or something you really understand can change what you know, because you know, we know within ourselves. I've experienced it. I know this to be true. There is nothing that can shake it. We've just been too long been affected by outside things, and we've forgotten who and what we really are and what we're here for. Yes, and back.
You know, I apologize, I was late, so I missed the beginning of the presentation, but I, for lack of true knowledge, I've read Siddhartha, mm-hmm. right? And it talks about the journey, okay. you know, and all the different steps of the journey that you need to get to nirvana, to be completely complete before you're on your last life. And I've maybe met one person in this life that I feel might be on their last life, and even they have a lot of anger, you know, towards some old situations. So how do you achieve balance, true balance, to be able to get to that next life? And have you encountered anybody like that in your lifetime?
I don't know, that's a heavy question. But we're familiar with Siddhartha, but theosophy that is made is only a very small part of the ancient teachings,
okay.
which are the Eastern teachings. Nirvana is not the be-all and get-all.
Okay. In theosophy, it's something different?
Well, theosophy and the ancient teachings in full
okay.
would say that. If, in fact, we are here to learn and understand lessons, and once we learn it, as we were stated earlier, we do become balanced and we become harmonious with everything in life. And it's like if you've been given a jewel of wisdom and you really understand it, someone of that nature should want to give it out to everybody that they could possibly see or help, to give them a hint. This is true wisdom. So with the idea of perfection, we mentioned some earlier perfected beings that in this lifetime that we know of, historically, these are perfected human beings. But they never stop. They don't look for nirvana. They look to be a help to all mankind and all humanity forever and ever. And even perfection to a limit is here. There's always more perfection and more to learn beyond. So it's a never ending. It's not looking for that self nirvana and peace. It's living to be a help to all mankind. And within that, knowing that, there is that peace, it comes through. So it's not to get out of everything, it's to become part of everything.
So the whole mission is to be of service to others?
Yes, and that's it. That's called humanity, that's the balance. And we live in a universe of law. There are no mistakes, no miracles. Things happen because things are in the right place to happen. Yes, you had a point.
Is it appropriate to say that theosophy is an Eastern philosophy? Although we make an effort to compare religious philosophies from East and West, isn't it better to say that theosophy is the divine wisdom, is the root of all religious philosophies, Eastern, Western, modern, ancient, we really can't say we're studying Eastern religious philosophy.
No, we're not. I'm sorry if we gave that idea that that's all we're studying. It is part of that divine wisdom. It is part of the ancient wisdom. And it's basically that there have been, where this philosophy came from, wasn't from one man's or woman's revelation. This has been brought down by individuals who have been perfected in earlier periods of evolution, who know it. We call them the elder brothers. Call them what you wish. These are people that come forth publicly at certain times, and other times they're behind the scenes. But the fact is, everything has been tried, true, tested, and checked, so that these teachings that we call, quote, theosophy today have been checked and verified, and they stand on their own. Yes?
Well, then, since the topic is about God and animal, can we address the meaning of cooperative action, and that without reincarnation, everything stops in this journey of God-man?
Of God what?
Man. We use the term God-man.
Oh, God.
Without reincarnation, meaning that there's a separation and then a rejoining for whatever purpose in the world. So it seems that there has to be a cooperative action between God, man, and the animal.
The cooperation will come when the lower part of our nature, we'll call the personality, and that true spiritual part of our nature, that soul nature, that spiritual nature within us, when that lower can be controlled, I think it's in the voice about, don't let thy senses control us. We are very much in a period of evolution where our senses do control us. And sometimes we always laugh about this when you hear all this and you go, well, who is in control? Who is in control here? And it's like, am I in control or am I not? It has been so long that we've let the forms take over, that the true thinker can't come through. And as stated, when one starts learning about the different parts of their nature, that you have a higher permanent, and that you have a lower transitory part of your nature that will be gone after this lifetime, the essence of the personality, if it was strong enough, has a possibility of coming back again. But can you just think about anything that you really want to do that you know there is not the time, the energy, or whatever you need to do in any one lifetime? This idea of the doctrine, a universal doctrine, which makes it even broader, of reincarnation, the fact that I can work towards something, and if I don't get it this time, and if I really want it, and be able to have it be part of my nature, it will come back to me again. I will have another time. But yet we don't want individuals to think of it, oh, well, forget it. If this is not too good, maybe the next time I'll get it. No, it takes effort. It takes work. It takes an understanding. And unless we embed it within to us, and make it part of our nature to know that I can and I will. And that's when we say I will, that's of a lot of power right there. I will get this under control. I will get this part of my nature together. The some lifetime we're going to come to a form like a Buddha, a Christ, a Krishna. It'll just come naturally out of us because we've built up all this energy to work on it. Yes.
And perhaps the best and simplest definition of will is that it is spirit in action. Mm. So if we set up desires, those desires will eventually, in this life or some other life, manifest themselves. We're here on this plane to work. We're here not for, we're here to correct some of the defects from faulty thinking before. And this, in the talk, it was mentioned about the review at night that we should dispassionately look at our actions during the day. Because if we look at them, which is a natural tendency, oh boy, that was so stupid, and how could I have done that or said that? But we're not really supposed to do that. We're supposed to look almost as if our personality is somebody
else.
and then we can objectively look at it. But then what goes on during the night? Why do we do it before we go to bed? And then is there something that takes place on another plane that manifests itself in the future?
You got the icing on the cake. As we said, spiritual, animal. In the daytime, we work on this plane. That spiritual part of our nature is literally locked up unless we've made an effort and a strong effort in many lifetimes to open a place for the spiritual to come through. So at night, when this physical body is put to rest and we go through, they say, sleep, deep sleep, it's like the goalie's been taken away from the jail. And the true spiritual nature goes to its plane of consciousness every night, every human being. We know that animals also go through the dream states. But for the human being, they state, even a criminal, the real true spiritual nature goes to its own plane of consciousness and communes with others on that plane. But as we are waking up and we're coming back the same way we went out from falling asleep, because most people can say, I've dreamt, but how many people can say, I went to sleep? We don't even know when we get into that sleep stage. It just happens. And then we go through the different states of dreams. And we only know, on the waking state, this level. This is all we've ever expressed. Let's put it that way. So, coming back from that highest, where we're communing with the truly spiritual nature of all, we have to come back the same way we went out. And as we're coming back and we're waking up, whatever we had on that level, it's maybe for some, they get a feeling that you can't really explain. It's a feeling of bliss, of beauty, or something. It's just a feeling they wake up with that they can't get over, and they wish it would last all day. And by the time they're done brushing their teeth and getting ready to get clothes to go off to work, it's gone. Or you remember some of these situations, but because we don't know the language, the symbol language of the higher planes of consciousness, we're going to take whatever we think we remember and bring it down to what we understand. And you get the idea that we're going to bring it back to only what we know on this level. We might not get the whole picture at all because we don't understand that level of consciousness, that universal level. Yes.
Yeah. Early this morning's discussion touched upon three things, the third of which was renunciation. renunciation. Could we just explain for a moment in this context what we mean by renunciation?
Oh, we talked about the patience and the endurance, okay, and the renunciation. The renunciation is where we can honestly say and state and know within ourselves we have gotten control. And we no longer let this lower part of our nature be in charge. We are thinking on higher levels. We are interacting on higher levels. We have given it up, but it takes time to understand it. We created it, we can recreate it. We need to have the forms be more of an open channel, not carry on ideas of old, of false ideas, of not being able to cleanse our mind and start all over again. We have so many habits that we've worked within our natures that we really don't take the time. So when one has had that renunciation part, it's when one has gained that wisdom enough to be able to only let that true nature, our only nature, show through. It seems like a duality, but it only comes from the one. Yes.
Well, renunciation is what the Gita is all about.
Well, the Gita
not
too.
Looking for the results of one's work, but doing that which is before us to do, and sacrificing everything to the highest that we understand. So, you know, the question was asked about cooperation. Well, that's the law of the universe.
Yes.
We wouldn't exist if it wasn't for cooperation. And that doctrine of hope, the idea, resides in the human kingdom. Reincarnation is the hope, but the idea resides in the human kingdom. We either have, we are hopeful for the lower lives, and then at the human stage, we become conscious choosers for that hope for ourselves and for the rest of humanity.
And that's enough to give lifetimes to, truly. Yes.
Theosophy teaches that reincarnation is a fact, and we also say that theosophy is the root all religions. Some religions teach that there's only one lifetime. And the question has arisen, why do some religions teach that? And I think you made the point that if we believe in reincarnation, we can say, okay, we have a project, but I can't do it in this lifetime. We'll do it in the next lifetime. And the argument has brought forward that those religious teachers who teach only one lifetime were counteracting a tendency in people who were saying, oh, well, I don't have to do it in this life, I have next life. So they fiddle away their lives being lazy. And that would be the origin of those religions who proclaim there's only one lifetime, to incite people to get it done in this time.
And the other thing, the power that comes from the go-between. We don't need an outside go-between to find our God within. We need to look within ourselves. I'm glad the Gita was mentioned, because after looking on information for this, see if this will make any of the students who have been studying the Gita understand why we can say this. We incarnate from life to life for the preservation of the just, the destruction of wickedness, and the establishment of righteousness. We are Krishna. We don't know it. We still think we're Arjuna. We are Krishna. We need to live and act as Krishna. And only, we did have a bunch of quotations, but this was the only one that will fit in right away. Mark Twain has said, "I've been born more times than anybody except Krishna." So we have two excellent books if you ever have a chance to get into the library about reincarnation. But there's a whole section of quotes from scientists, physics, teachers, all sorts, writers, musicians. How many people in the world, and in different time periods, believe they have been here before and they'll be back again? So hopefully this will give us hope. Thank you. Push the button.
Well, actually, all you need to do is turn it off.
Okay, the little off button on the side. See it? At the bottom, right there by your thumb.